good. Okay, so today's story is actually going to be about someone many of you may have heard of. Her name is Gladys Arwood. Okay, Gladys was born in 1902 in England. She was actually born to a bit of a working class family, and to her parents from a very early on, it was very clear that their eldest child would actually not be the brains of the family. She was really not suited for school. She was terrible at maths, and she decided, with her parents' blessing, to leave school at the age of 14 and start working. She soon found work as a parlour maid in London, and she loved this kind of work, even though it was quite tough, long hours, very little pay. But she loved it because she was working for a family in the West End of London, in the theatre district. And there she could have the pleasures of London life. She used to walk through the streets just to look at the actresses and the rich and famous in their silk gowns and fashionable hats and so on. And she used to love, you know, going to the restaurants, the gambling, the smoking, all that came with living in London and the high life, even though she wasn't exactly very wealthy. After work one day, as her work as a maid, she was walking through the streets, and she wasn't going anywhere in particular. She was just walking, just looking and watching people. And she noticed there was a group of youth outside a church. And as she walked past, they called to her and they said, "Come, we've got a service. Come and join us." And she was thinking, this is not how I'm going to spend my evening off. I'm not going to a church service. She declined, but they linked arms with her and she found herself walking in. Well, she was really cranky about this. She felt that they had forced her, and she sat there grumpy in the pews, surrounded by these youth that had invited her. And so she listened very grudgingly to the sermon, and she felt that she'd heard it all before, which she sort of had. She'd been to Sunday school and church all her childhood life. But the thing is, the speaker spoke with such urgency and with such reality that she felt very uneasy about the whole thing. So the minute it was over, she wanted to get out, and she did. She headed straight out the door the second she could. But just before she stepped out, somebody called to her in the crowd and said, "Miss Arwood, I believe God is wanting you." She turned around and said, "Don't worry, I don't want him." And the person said, "Well, you might not want him, but he certainly wants you." Well, that really made her upset. She was very disturbed by this whole experience. And for the first time ever, she stayed disturbed and miserable and upset for a very, very long time. And in fact, her misery just increased to the point where she actually decided she needed to go and visit a local clergyman. She went to visit this local clergyman to try and discuss the problem of how she was feeling, and he wasn't home. So she ended up speaking to his wife. And this woman seemed to really understand Gladys and really understand where she was at. And so, you know, she spoke to her over many cups of tea, and Gladys soon understood that she had to make a decision. Either she continued to reject God in the way she was living, or she gave her life entirely to him. And so there, without any huge fanfare and with no big emotion or anything, Gladys knelt down and prayed and asked the Lord to come into her life. And in her words, she said, "Well, God, take me on." And as far as Gladys was concerned, she gave herself that day 100% to the Lord Jesus. Now, one day, Gladys was reading an article in the newspaper, and it mentioned China. And she was fascinated by China, and she kept talking about it. She was most fascinated by the fact that there were millions of people there who had never really heard of Jesus. They've never had the Bible. They've never even heard of God. And she soon was talking about how there should be people, we should send people, people should tell these millions of people about the Lord Jesus. And she was talking so much about China, and her sister and her cousin, they kept saying, "Gladys, what's this got to do with you? What's China got to do with you?" And her dad, after a while where she was talking on about China, her dad sort of at one point, he said to her, "All this talk, Gladys, What exactly do you think you're going to do in China? Are you a nurse? No. Are you a teacher? No. Can you even speak the language? No. Okay, so what good do you think you will do in China? You know all you're good for? You're only good at talk, talk, talk. And Gladys ran out of the room crying. But then she stopped. And then she said, well, that's it. I'm good at talking. And so she decided that she would book herself in to Hudson Taylor's China Inland Mission, a women's college training institute for missionaries. Now here they not only did lessons and learnt the language and culture, but here they also worked in the local communities. They went out into the slums. They went and they preached, and she worked with women and so on. And they had a Sunday school, etc. Now Gladys was the most neat and practical of all the ladies that were there training to be missionaries. Not only that, but she was the only one who could control the slum kids in Sunday school. And she had a wonderful way of really speaking to the women that were in the slum areas around London. But unfortunately, she really couldn't keep up with the lessons. She, no matter how hard she tried, she couldn't get anything between her ears, as she put it. It was in one ear and out the other. And no matter how hard she tried, she just couldn't get the language. It just didn't work for her. And she worked so hard. She borrowed other people's notes and people helped her, but she just couldn't pass any of the exams at all. And after 3 months, the committee, with great sorrow actually, said that no, she would not be fit to be a missionary in China. For a start, you would need to learn the language, and they really felt that she just didn't have the capacity to learn the language. So she packed her things and she left with no plans and nowhere particular to go. She had been so sure that the Lord called her to China, and the very idea that she had it in black and white that she was unfit to go, it didn't crush her, but it did hurt her a little bit. So they did give her some contacts, and she ended up working as a maid for a missionary couple in Bristol. And this missionary couple heard about her and gave her a little card which said, "Be not afraid, remember the Lord." And she kept that in her Bible. Now, from there, she actually worked with this missionary couple in the slums of Bristol. And here she experienced poverty like she had never seen it before. Here it was Bristol, sort of like a port town, and the slums were horrific. It was the poverty of a greater level than she had seen in London. But Gladys threw herself into this work, and they had a hostel for girls, and they went into the slums, and she used to go in and she used to clean up the children who were starving and ragged, and she used to work with the women, many of which were so degraded, and the men who were drinking themselves into oblivion, and she used to go in and sort things out and work with these families, and she would gather all this material so that she could give out clothing and food, and she worked with such incredible efficiency that people said to her, "Gladys, this is your calling. You're not meant to go to China. This is what you're meant to do. Look how much you've done in such a short time." And she couldn't explain it, but she kind of knew that this wasn't going to be forever and that she really was being called to China. And so Gladys, being very practical, decided that if the Lord had called her to China, and the China Inland Mission, the big missionary organisation that sent missionaries over there, didn't accept her, then she would have to go by herself. And so she went to a travel agent, and the travel agent was most surprised when she went up and said, "Excuse me, sir, what is the cheapest way to get a one-way ticket to China?" And of course, this travel agent was quite alarmed at this, but he said to her, "You will have to go by train. That is by far the cheapest way. And if you go by train, it's not very safe, but you will go through Europe, and then you will go through Russia, across Siberia, and into China that way. And it will cost you £47 to travel third class." And so Gladys booked her ticket then and there. Even though she didn't have the £47, she persuaded the man that she would pay in tiny installments. She got another job as a parlour maid, and she started working furiously to earn the money, and she put all of her life savings into that ticket to China, the one-way train ticket. Things were actually falling into place at this time because there was a news that came from China that there was an elderly missionary by the name of Jeannie Lawson who had been in China all her life. And she asked if there was anybody, a young missionary perhaps, who could come and help her. And so Gladys, when she heard about this from other people, she said, "Well, that's me." And so things were really falling into place. Now Gladys set off from her journey, on her journey from Liverpool Station in England. And she had two suitcases, one which contained food and a roll of bedding, and the other which contained all her worldly possessions. She tied a camp stove and a kettle to it. And that was it. And so she and these two suitcases were bundled onto a train which sped across Europe. Now this is a story in itself, which I don't have time to tell you, but she, as she moved further and further away from England, she became more and more aware of how alone she really was. In those days, people didn't travel very much, and also English was not spoken, and so soon she found that she couldn't communicate with anybody. It was a very difficult journey as well. There was fighting on different borders, and she ended up having to... spend a night on a platform in a foreign country. She was detained by soldiers who thought, because they read her passport wrong, it said missionary, but they thought it said she operated machinery. So she was. They hoped that perhaps she would like to stay with them in Russia, which of course she didn't. She ended up having to escape from a hotel. She had to get out, and somebody helped her onto a boat, which took her over to another ship, which took her somewhere else, and she ended up in Japan, which is not where she wanted to be. Somebody, the British consul, helped her and other missionaries, and she went down to Kobe, and then she got another ship, which landed her in China. So, there, she thought, she would meet Mrs. Lawson at the port, and Mrs. Lawson would take her back to her home for a nice cup of tea. That was very far from the truth. In fact, when she arrived in China, nobody had heard of Mrs. Lawson. Nobody had heard of Yangcheng, where Mrs. Lawson lived. And so some missionaries took her in, and they took her to another city, and other people in that city, these other missionaries, had other contacts who took her to another place. And then there were finally people who knew Mrs. Lawson quite well and who knew Yangcheng. And so they told her that, yes, you just need to ride a mule, which is like a donkey. It's 2 days' journey from this city. And so Gladys, battered, bruised, and still wearing the same dress that she left England in with her two suitcases, was bundled onto a mule and bounced her way all the way to the city of Yangcheng. Now, Yangcheng, when she arrived, was a sort of a more rural kind of city. It was up in the mountains. And she was not hugely thrilled when she got there. It was old. It was evidently poor. It was fairly crumbling and so on. And then, of course, when she finally knocked on Mrs. Lawson's door, Mrs. Lawson flung open the door and snapped, "Well, who are you?" And that was how Gladys arrived in China. Now, poor Mrs. Lawson, we must give her a little credit for this, but she actually, when she opened the door that day and she looked and she saw a very short, because Gladys was very short, a very short lady in the grubbiest orange dress she'd ever seen and two shabby coats with two battered suitcases standing at a door, she actually thought that she was a gypsy selling pots. So that accounted for that sort of greeting. Now, after a fairly shaky start, actually Mrs. Lawson and Gladys got on really well. They were both sort of bubbly, fiery characters, so occasionally they had their arguments. But Mrs. Lawson had this wonderful idea that she would transform the place that they were in into an inn, and no ordinary inn either. She wanted to make this an inn for the muleteers, the mule drivers, who had their chains of mules, and they were traders, and they went from, you know, through the villages and cities. And they often came past on the main street. And so she had this idea that they would actually have this inn, and the drivers would come, they would feed them, there would be a bed, but there would also be lots of Bible stories. And these people would learn the scripture in this way. Well, Gladys was going to be involved in this, and so she was given the very important job of standing outside and trying to get the customers. Well, Gladys had thought that her first words in Chinese would be something like, you know, Jesus loves you or something like that. Unfortunately, the first words that she learnt in Chinese were taught to her by Yang, the cook, who worked for Mrs. Lawson. And he thought that she should learn this so she could call it out and, you know, attract the customers. So her first words in Chinese were, no fleas, no bugs, good, 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 come, come, come. Now, had Gladys reflected a little bit, she may have been slightly troubled by the truth of that statement, and perhaps it would give added significance to the words lie, 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 but she wasn't given to much reflection. Now, it didn't really work at first, and so Mrs. Lawson said, what are you doing just yelling, no fleas, no bugs, good, good, good? Well, you need to do something as well. You need to jump out in front of the first mule, and you need to drag it by its nose and head it into our courtyard, because then all the other mules will just follow, and by the time the driver, who's often sat at the end, by the time the driver realises it'll be too hard for him to try and turn them all around and get them out, that we will have our customer. And so Gladys was not only yelling, no fleas, no bugs, but she was jumping out in front of the mule trains and dragging them into the courtyard, and the drivers were like, wow, what are you doing? But it was too late, and then they ended up saying, okay, okay, I'll come in. But then they found quite a hospitable place with good noodle soup and a warm bed. But most importantly, they heard all these very interesting stories about the Bible. Now soon, Mrs. Lawson and Gladys didn't need to kidnap their customers. They actually were able, they got lots of customers because the mule drivers, you know, they told other mule drivers, this is the place, you should stop here. You get free entertainment. They tell you stories. So that was Mrs. Lawson's very ingenious idea. Now soon Gladys was also running through the streets, running errands for Mrs. Lawson. And at that time, you know, the foreigners were called foreign devils in China. And Gladys used to be chased around by the children who would yell and surround her wherever she went. But this actually worked out really well because she started copying the phrases and she started to pick up the Chinese language with incredible speed and accuracy. And in fact, you know, far quicker than many other missionaries. And Mrs. Lawson decided that her name was just no good. She would have to have a Chinese name for sure. Nobody could pronounce Gladys. And so she gave Gladys a Chinese name, Ai Weide, and that, the virtuous one. And that was the name that she was known by in China. Now Mrs. Lawson became very ill after a fall. And after just a year of being in China, Mrs. Lawson died, and Gladys found herself completely alone. Now, Gladys realised that Mrs. Lawson had been putting a lot of her own money into the running of the inn. And Gladys wasn't with a mission organisation, so she wasn't really supported. Some friends later on used to send money, but she really didn't have anything. And the running of the inn, she realised, came with lots of taxes. The governor of Yangcheng demanded that they pay all sorts of taxes, and they simply couldn't. They didn't have the money after Mrs. Lawson passed away. And so Gladys didn't know what to do. It was just, she just didn't have any means of keeping this inn running. But just at that time, when things were looking pretty hopeless, Gladys was paid a visit by the governor of Yangcheng. And this governor came with great fanfare, came to the inn, and Gladys was quite scared because this was a very rare occurrence. And he came, and after the exchanges of politeness, he said, I would like to appoint you as my chief foot inspector. And Gladys didn't quite know what to say to that. She didn't know whether to say she was very honoured or not. But you see, she did feel that this perhaps was from the Lord. Not perhaps, she definitely knew this was from the Lord. Now, at that time, foot binding was still happening in China, particularly in the village areas. And this was where they would take the feet of little tiny girls, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and crush them into bandages so that they would grow in a deformed way and be tiny. And so the idea was, if you had tiny, tiny feet, then you were more beautiful. And if your feet were not bound and you had big, ugly feet, then you would probably not be married. It was as simple as that. Now, this had actually been outlawed in China in 1912, but in these villages, and particularly around Yangcheng, in those areas, the villagers took no notice and were still practicing this. And the government was really trying to stamp it out. And so the governor was required to have a foot inspector. Now, the only thing is that it was very wrong for a man to inspect a woman's feet. That would be terribly unseemly. So it would have to be a woman. But the only problem in Yangcheng is that every single woman had their feet bound. So it would be no good that a chief foot inspector would also have bound feet. So the only person he could appoint was Ai Weide. So Gladys found herself as the chief foot inspector. And she was to go, being paid of course, she was to go on a mule and travel around all the villages, and she was to meet with all the women and just check their feet and particularly persuade them not to bind the feet of their children. And so she said to the governor, she said, yes, I agree to do this, thank you, but on one condition, can I speak to all the women about the living God? And the governor said, does your living God promote foot binding? And Gladys said, oh, certainly not. And so, of course, he said, yes, you can talk to them about what you like, as long as you get rid of foot binding. And so Gladys, with great thankfulness, realized that the Lord had provided the most perfect thing for her. She traveled throughout the villages. She met with all the women. She was given two soldiers to make it a bit more official. And she went everywhere and was paid for it, and so she could put the money into the running of the inn. And this is where her father's words really rung true. All she could do was talk, talk, talk. And my goodness, with her limited Chinese vocabulary, she was the most incredible storyteller. And she was probably the only chief foot inspector across all of China, which the women couldn't wait for her to come back, because they really loved hearing the stories that she told them. Now, she did adapt them slightly to the audience, since, you know, many of these women had never, ever been outside their village. And so she had them imagining the Israelites escaping the magistrate and governor of Egypt with their rice bowls and chopsticks and woks as they ran out. But, you know, she had a huge impact on these villages. And soon, many Christian churches, little gatherings, were springing up in a lot of these rural towns. Now, Gladys's reputation and message had really spread by this time. She was well known across the area. And the governor as well knew of her message. And so one day he sent a very urgent messenger to the inn and said, you must come directly, immediately, drop everything and come now. You must come to the prison. And so Gladys, she thought there was some mistake. This was a men's prison. It was a notorious, horrible prison. And the idea that she would be called to the prison, what for? And so she did. She went, and the governor said, you know, good thing you're here, and pulled her into an office and said, we have a riot happening in our prison right now. The prisoners they're killing each other with machetes. You need to go and sort it out. All the guards, all the soldiers have fled for their lives, so you need to go in and sort it out. And Gladys, who was a tiny little woman, there in her blue dress, said to the governor, you want me to go into that men's prison and sort out a riot that's happening right now? He said, you must go quickly or everyone will be killed. And Gladys said, well, why do you want me to go in? And he looked at her and said, you have been telling everybody that you have the living God living inside you. So why don't you go into the prison with your living God and you sort this out? And Gladys thought, but it doesn't work that way. But then she thought, wait a minute. This is a wonderful testimony. Of course I should go in there. And so she walked through those iron gates, which were slammed shut, and she prayed to the Lord. She thought it would be her last day. But she said, Lord, I have no choice. You know, they really do believe that you are here with me. And so here I go, Lord. We can sort this out. And so she walked into that prison and through a dark tunnel, and then which opened into a courtyard, and she could hear as she walked through the screams and yells of these men who were totally out of control. They had machetes, which they must have got somehow off the guards, and there were dead bodies everywhere. And she saw there was blood splattered, pools of blood, people lying in blood, and there was a man running at her because there was a prisoner who was crouched behind a crate right near her as she walked through, and he raised his machete and he was screaming, and suddenly Gladys, seeing this chaos, became so angry, and she stepped up in front of the man who held his, who had the machete in the air, and she said, "You stop that right now!" And he turned around and he froze, because there was this tiny woman in a bright blue dress yelling at him. And it was this, he didn't know what to do. He dropped the machete to the ground. All the screaming stopped and everyone just turned and looked at her. And she was shaking on the inside, but she knew that she had only a few moments, and so she said, "All of you, get over here right now. Drop your weapons. Form a line." And the thing is, they all did. They all came meekly over and they formed this line in front of her. And she spoke to them and she asked, "You know, what are you doing? What's all this?" And as she looked at them, she could see that they were starving. They were covered in boils. Many of them relied on friends and relatives to give them food. And so several people had just died of starvation because they hadn't got any relatives. And so she looked at their tattered rags and she just had so much compassion for them. And she said, "You know, you clean up this courtyard, you line up the dead, and I will appeal to the governor on your behalf." And so when the governor did come back, she said, "I've got one request. Do not punish the prisoners for what they've done, and we're going to make some changes to this prison." And the governor could hardly refuse her after that. And so in the next few weeks, there were weaving looms delivered to the prison. She had garden beds dug, and she had the prisoners working in teams. Some were weaving clothes for themselves, some were digging gardens to grow vegetables. She even taught them how to breed rabbits, which they ended up selling as meat to the villagers around. And she even had them grinding their own grain after a while. And so this prison was quite transformed. And people really definitely had heard of Ai Weide by this time. And of course, the other thing about this prison is that they now had a regular visitor. And Gladys was there often and speaking to them about the Lord. And many of these prisoners came to know Christ. Now Gladys, actually, in all of this drama, was actually very lonely. She prayed that the Lord would provide her a husband. And she knew that it would have to be someone who shared her call for China. And she really felt that the Lord would be able to find someone for her, even though she was there in sort of a remote part of mainland China. But the Lord didn't. And she wrote in the corner of her Bible one day, she wrote, "Lonely. The very word can start tears. Those who walk with Christ can never walk alone. Alone, but never alone. For he is here." Now Gladys was walking through the village streets one day when she saw a lady who was definitely not from that area. She dressed very differently. And next to this lady who was stood on the street corner was a really tattered, poor, sick-looking girl who was evidently starving. And Gladys stopped and said to the lady, "Your child is very sick. She needs some help." And the lady just snapped at her and said, "Well, you want to buy her then?" And she soon realized that lady was not at all the mother, but was actually trying to sell off this child. And she quickly went to the governor and said, "You, what is this happening? Why is this lady doing this?" And the governor waved her away and said, "This is a black market. This is, you know, these are powerful people who trade off children like this. We can't do anything about it. So don't get involved." And Gladys was outraged, but she knew that the only way that she would be able to do anything about this and help this little girl would be to buy her. And so she went to the woman and she sort of said, "How much?" And the woman said, 100. And she said, "I don't have 100. And she pulled out in her pocket 9 pence. And she said, "This is all I have." Well, the woman grabbed the coins and walked off. And Gladys was left with a little 5-year-old girl who was very, very sick. Her name became 9 pence. Now, this little girl, 9 pence, was the first of many, many children that were delivered to Gladys's door. In fact, 9 pence herself went out and sometimes found other little kids who were wandering the streets. And this, in some way, was how the Lord answered Gladys's prayer. No need to be lonely anymore. She had many to care for. As these children grew up, Gladys was very much aware that there was something that was not quite right. She wasn't connecting in the same way to these people in China as the locals were. And she realized that there was something the Lord wanted her to deal with. And that was her national pride. She was still British at heart. And she realized that this was something that was holding her back. And so she did something that no other missionary had ever done. She destroyed her British passport, renounced her British citizenship, and she actually became a Chinese citizen. Now, Gladys had no idea of the repercussions of that, because she was totally oblivious to the fact that the Second World War was just rumbling in the distance. Germany was amassing their troops. Japan had already started their assault on China. And she didn't, and even though she'd heard about Japan and the invasion and so on, she didn't think, and no one else really thought, that that would have any impact on them because they were so far inland and they were also quite remote, and Japan might just be on, the cities on the coast, but no one thought that Japan would ever be any problem for these people in the mountain areas. But on a spring day in 1938, there was the rumble of planes. And, the villagers had never seen planes, and so they all ran out to have a look at these noisy silver birds. And it was too late for Gladys to warn, as these planes swooped down low and dropped a barrage of bombs on Yangcheng. And Gladys herself was thrown to the ground. There was a bomb just outside the inn, or just on the street corner, and she herself was buried in rubble. And after she was able to get out of the rubble, she went into the streets and discovered the carnage that was the city. It was horrific. People had run out to actually look, and so many people had died. So many buildings had been destroyed. And she ended up, taking the lead and helping the wounded and clearing the rubble. And people actually looked to her to know what to do. Now, she had heard messages from other people that actually, the soldiers were 2 days' march away. And she knew that the strategy would be to send in the bombs first to weaken the city, and then the soldiers would march through and just take it. And so she talked to the governor and said, "We have to get everybody out of here. We've got only a day. We've got to get people out, like, today. They need to go to relatives, anybody they know in the farms, the village, rural areas, getting out of Yangcheng, get out of the city, so that there'll be nothing here for the soldiers." And there were people that had nowhere to go, but Gladys, being a chief foot inspector, had travelled the whole area. And she knew of a village that was not even on the map. It was a village with only 8 houses, and near this village were a whole lot of caves. And so she led the people who had nowhere else to go, she led them to these caves, and she set up there, and the village nearby gave them food. And so she ended up staying there for a while, as things started to calm down. And she ended up then going to different cities, but it was so dangerous at this time because the Japanese had progressed at such an alarming rate no one had ever predicted. And not only that, but the communist army had also started going through the villages. And it was extremely dangerous, particularly for the young children who were taken as recruits and used either by the communist army or the Japanese. And so it was a really difficult time. And she knew that she couldn't stay there with all the children that she had, and at this time she even had a whole orphanage. It was just far too dangerous. She had heard that the only place that would be safe would be on the other side of the Yellow River. And here, from on the other side of the Yellow River, she could maybe get to Xi'an. And there would probably be some safety for her and for the children. So there were other people that took whole lots of children and took trains and trucks and so on and got over to the other side of the Yellow River. But now Gladys left, she was left with about 100 children, and it was just her and one other missionary. And they talked to each other and they said, well, we've got to get these kids out, and now there are no trucks, there's nothing. And so they knew that the only way to get these about 94 to 100 children out of the cities around Yangcheng would be to walk. But they would have to walk over the mountains and all the way to the Yellow River, somehow get across the Yellow River. There were ferries and boats and things. And then from there, they would have to somehow work out a way of getting from there to Xi'an. And so the two missionaries sat there and looked at each other, and Gladys said, well, you can't go, so I'll go. And he looked at her and thought, you're going to lead 100 children over the mountains with Japanese soldiers? You have to go the hardest mountain paths so that the soldiers wouldn't be there? You really think you're going to do that? Well, Gladys was really unsure herself. She knew that she was called to China, and she knew she had work to do, but the idea of fleeing, it didn't sit well with her, and she didn't know whether the Lord wanted her to do that, whether even that was more dangerous than staying. And she had this great responsibility of what to do with these children. But that very day, when she opened her Bible, she read a verse that it just kind of stuck out to her, and it was the verse that said, flee ye to the mountains, dwell deeply in the hidden places, because the king of Babylon has conceived a purpose against you. And she took that as the Lord's direct command to get out. And so the very next day she organized all those orphans. They had a blanket which they wrapped a rice bowl, chopsticks and a face towel in. They were all given some food to carry. The teenage boys were given packets of food that they tied onto poles. And 100 children, led by this tiny woman who was probably shorter than many of the children, went out of the city and headed into the mountain paths. Now, the trip was incredibly difficult. That's the trip today, but the trip that Gladys took would have been far more difficult through the mountains. And it was probably around about a 200-kilometre walk that she did. And it was very, very difficult for them. The children, of course, after the first day, had run out of their enthusiasm. Soon their food had run out and they had nothing at all. They literally would be sleeping out in the open. At times they slept in the shelter of a Buddhist temple. Other times they found some sort of rocky outcrops where they could shelter underneath. And many times they were sleeping out completely in the open. Soon the shoes that the kids wore were torn to tatters, and their feet were cut and bruised. At times they had to form a human chain and pass the younger ones, and the youngest were about 3 to 4 years old, one by one up the mountain paths, because it was just really difficult. So starving, hungry, tired and just exhausted, these children walked for 2 weeks non-stop, although of course they stopped at night. But finally, they saw the mighty Yellow River. And tired and hungry as these kids were, they made for the banks of the river, knowing that this was a mark of safety. This was one of their destinations. And when they got to the banks, to their utter dismay, all the villages on the coast there, on the edge of the river, were completely deserted. You see, the command had gone out that they were to take all the boats, the ferry, any means of crossing away. This was going to be the point where the Japanese would not be able to go across. And Gladys had arrived too late. Well, she wept. You know, she'd brought them this far. It was absolutely exhausting and such a feat. And here they were at the banks of the Yellow River with the Japanese potentially behind them somewhere, and no way to cross. And there was nobody about at all. The place was completely deserted. There was no one on the other side. People had fled. And they stayed there for 2 days. You know, she tried to get the kids busy, but these kids also knew where they were. They were stuck with the Japanese behind them and the water in front and no way of crossing. Well, a teenage girl on the second day came to Gladys and said, "You told us that there was a story about Moses and he was fleeing an army too. And he came to the Red Sea and he prayed to God and God parted that Red Sea and they walked across. Why aren't you praying to part the Yellow River?" Well, Gladys was a bit annoyed at this question and she said to the girl, "Because I am not Moses." And the girl said, "I know you are not Moses, but isn't God still God?" And Gladys sat up and she realized that she had been sent on this trek by God. God had told her to go. Why would God just abandon her at the banks of the Yellow River? And so she realized that she had doubted, and the fear of the situation had taken over her thinking. And so she called all the children together, and together they prayed, and she asked the Lord to get them across somehow. And of course, after they prayed, she started to sing, and together they all sang hymns. Meanwhile, a Chinese nationalist soldier was on the other side, and he heard some strange sounds, so he called some other soldiers to come investigate. And they saw this group of people, and they went over then to investigate and saw this 100 children on the banks of the Yellow River, and this tiny foreigner. And they said, "What are you doing here? This is so dangerous. Why are you here?" And Gladys explained, knowing that the Lord had sent these soldiers. And so she persuaded them to get a boat, which they had, and they ferried the kids across, bit by bit, group by group. And finally, they were all safe on the other side of the Yellow River. But they were certainly not at Xi'an. And so Gladys really had no time to worry. They ended up walking to another city. There were some trucks that were available that were travelling, and they hitched rides on these trucks. There were so many refugees pouring into Xi'an. So the trains were running free of charge, and they were just packed full with people fleeing. And so she got the kids on there. And in fact, she actually, on one occasion, had to get them all on a coal train. They were lying on top of lumps of coal. And in the morning, they were all completely black with the coal dust. And finally, they arrived at the gates of Xi'an. But again, she was too late. They said, "We cannot take any more people. We are full to bursting, and we certainly have nothing to cater for 100 children. Please, you have to go elsewhere." And so, exhausted, she turned, and they found that they could go to maybe Fufeng, which was another several kilometres away. And they managed to get a train, and finally, after 27 days of walking and travelling, Gladys was able to relinquish the responsibility of these children to an orphanage in Fufeng. And she had time to rest. But rest she did not. In fact, she thought, you know, now if I'm here in Fufeng, this is going to be my new place, so I need to find out what needs to be done. And so she went, exhausted and really tired, she went and she found a tiny Christian church. In fact, there wasn't a Christian church in Xi'an, but there was in Fufeng. And so there she came and she walked into the church to see if she could meet some of the missionaries who worked there. But everything went black and she collapsed unconscious on the floor of the church. Now the missionaries who soon found her, they found this little woman collapsed on their doorstep, and she was evidently a foreigner. And nobody knew who she was. In fact, nobody had known about this trek. There was only the other missionary who she'd left in Yangcheng area, and by now he was actually a prisoner of war of the Japanese. And so it was only her, and no one else knew that she was there. And so these missionaries, they called doctors, and doctors came and they examined her, and they realized that she is suffering from complete exhaustion, malnutrition. She had pneumonia and typhus fever. And the fever that she had was so severe that she was delirious. In fact, she thought the doctors were Japanese soldiers. And she was so seriously ill, it took her 3 months to recover. And some missionaries actually took her in and cared for her every day. They tried to get her strength up and so on. They cooked for her. And she never fully recovered. Even after this, she had moments where she suddenly was really disoriented and she didn't know where she was, or she would just be very confused and forget what she was saying, because that fever had been so significant, it had even affected her brain. But despite this and despite the weakness she felt, she carried on undeterred. Now, after 17 years in China, she was persuaded to go back to see her family in England. And when she finally arrived back in England, nobody recognized her. She was so small and insignificant, so worn, that her own family actually paged her on the loudspeaker because they didn't realize that that woman standing there on the platform was her. But the other thing that Gladys didn't know was that her fame preceded her. And when she landed in England, there was even a little tiny column in the newspaper that said that Gladys Arwood was back from China. You see, she didn't know, but there was a journalist that came and visited her once, and this journalist actually wrote an article in the Time magazine about Gladys and her work in China. And not only that, but she'd been sending letters home, and her mum had been talking about our Gladys in China to various women meetings, and so people knew about her, and soon, you know, they were asking her to come and speak at different meetings, and, you know, the mayor of London wanted to meet her, and Gladys was just totally overwhelmed. This was really not what she expected, and she was still a parlour maid at heart, and so the idea of this mayor asking her for a cup of tea, it just was so wrong. She said to her friend, "Oh, I certainly am not going to do that. I can't accept that invitation." And her friend said to her, "Oh dear, do you not think they have souls for salvation as well?" Well, that was it for Gladys. And she realized that this was a very new situation, and she would definitely try and make the use of the opportunity she had. Now, she did meet with the mayor, she met with the archbishop, she met with the queen even, and she was invited all over the country to speak. In fact, she was invited to a women's meeting once. It was an afternoon tea, a lovely sort of afternoon tea time where they would get a speaker, but they would really be there for a nice social gathering. And this reverend had a fairly elderly congregation. And as Gladys arrived to speak, you know, they were whispering to each other about her funny foreign dress and things like that. And they were perhaps more interested in the scones and tea afterwards. And as they settled into their seats, hoping that the speaker wouldn't speak for too long, Gladys stood up. And after about 10 minutes of introductions, Gladys got into full flight, just as they were settling back into their chairs, their eyelids a little heavy. And Gladys said, "And then God said to Abraham, 'Get out!'" And all these elderly ladies shot out of their chairs, and from then they were on the edge of their seats and eyes wide with astonishment as Gladys told them all the things that had happened in China, and she challenged them about the Almighty God who calls us all, and if he calls us, he also equips us faithfully. Now, on that particular occasion, Gladys spoke for over 1 hour past when she was meant to. And the reverend, well, to his great surprise, and perhaps slight envy, not one of those elderly ladies made any comment. Now, there are other numerous stories of how she met with people one-on-one, and perhaps one of the stories is when she went to see a lady and she was talking to her, but Gladys could kind of see that this lady was not quite, well, there was something troubling her. And so Gladys asked, and the lady ended up saying, "You know, well, it's my husband. I don't know. He spends all his time at the pub now, and he drinks, and then he comes home, and he's so drunk, and he's violent, and I just don't know what to do." And Gladys grasped her hand and said, "Well, my dear, we shall get him out of that pub. Let's pray him out. And so with clenched fists, Gladys prayed. And she said, Lord, get him out of that pub this very minute. Make his beer taste horrible. Make him hate the very sight of it. Make him push it across the counter this moment. Make him get up from that bar stool. Make him walk straight to that door and through the door. Then make him stand on the street corner. Make him cross that street. Make him walk down the street and come back right here to the home. Make him come to the door this instant. And with this prayer, that the lady was most surprised. But as they said amen, there was a knock at the door, and her husband had returned. Now, these incidents perhaps mattered more to Gladys than the tight, packed schedule of meetings. But it was very difficult for Gladys in England at this time. You see, she was so famous. There was a book about her. There was a Hollywood movie, which was very, very inaccurate and mortified her terribly. She appeared on the BBC, she went on television, and with all of this fame and fortune, it never really went to her head. In fact, she used to give all the money away to the various missionaries she knew in China, and she also set up orphanages around. But you see, her heart was still in China, and she really didn't feel at home in England. But now things were so different in China. The communists had taken over, and it was now impossible for her to return. But she ended up going to Taiwan. And in 1957, she went back and she discovered that there were so many refugees there in Taiwan, people who had escaped from China. And she worked amongst these people, and she ended up living in the same way she had previously, renting a tiny room, preaching every day, travelling, working with the women. And she ended up, again, doing what she had done previously, and that is caring for children who came across her path. One lady gave her a little child that needed a mother, and then soon someone broke into her house, not to steal anything, but actually to deliver a newborn baby. And so soon she was again a mother to many people who in their adult life referred to Gladys as their mother. But with all of this, she still suffered from moments of confusion. Her later years were difficult. It was hard. She was cheated out of some money. Sometimes she said things in public that she later regretted. And she had to travel all over the world. You know, she was touring. She came to Australia, New Zealand. She went to Canada. She went to America. She went to Hong Kong. She started orphanages in Hong Kong as well. And it was a really difficult time. In fact, she wrote a letter to her family in which she said, I'm told I have low blood count, high blood pressure. I'm on the edge of a nervous breakdown. I have horrible dreams. Sometimes I'm not sure what is real and what's a dream. But I know that I am trusting him, and he will see me through. Now, in 1969 at Christmas, Gladys was back in Taiwan, and she wasn't feeling so well. She had a bit of a cold. But she was very busy during that period. And on New Year's Day, she was asked to speak at a New Year's Day service of some sort. And she was determined to go. But the young missionary who was actually living with her at that particular time, Kathleen, this young missionary said to her, you shouldn't go, you're not well. And Gladys said, oh, no, it's all right, I'll just go. And so she went out into the cold and damp, and Kathleen worried about her. And when she came back that evening, Gladys was really not very well at all, and she went straight to bed. And Kathleen called the doctor, and the doctor came and discovered that Gladys actually had pleurisy, a lung problem. And, you know, she was given her medicine and injections and made comfortable. And then later that night, Kathleen went in to check on her, and she found that Gladys was no longer there. She had slipped away to her eternal home, and she was 67 years old. Later, some friends found written in the corner of her Chinese Bible. This was written fairly recently, so not long before she passed away. And it was the words, Lord, keep me strong in the sense of thy call. And indeed the Lord did. because God is faithful. And that's our story for today.